Welcome to the Global Investor Podcast, a show that focuses on helping foreign investors enter the lucrative U.S. real estate market. Host Charles Carrillo combines decades of real estate investing experience with a professional background in international banking to interview experts in all areas of U.S. real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Charles Carrillo.
Welcome to another episode of the Global Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Carrillo. Today we have Brian Driscoll. He began his marketing career in the early 2000s as a freelance focused on SEO, search engine optimization. And in 2014, Brian purchased his first real estate property and noticed a $15,000 wholesale fee that was attached to the deal. So he decided to start marketing for his own deals in Pittsburgh. Today he owns more than $5 million worth of real estate, all with less than about $800,000 worth of debt. So it's great. So thank you so much for being on the show today, Brian.
Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
So you have a very interesting background. You went from a digital marketer to real estate investor and using your digital marketing skills to really build out your whole portfolio. So tell us a little bit about yourself, both personally and professionally, prior to getting involved with real estate investing.
Okay, cool. So I got involved. I got introduced to real estate like way back in the day. Like my dad used to listen to like all the old timers in the car and the cassette tape. So I heard it and he took me to a Ron LeGrand seminar back in 98. I don't know if you know Ron.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he got me in the back. You know Ron?
Yeah. He had that famous line. He goes, if I can close quickly and pay cash, what's the lowest price you'll do? That was like his famous line, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah. So I went to one of his seminars. Like remember when I used to travel around to different cities? So I went to one of the seminars and I was 18 years old and maybe 17. I was probably 18 because I had a credit card. And I had to go to the back of the room to sign up. It was like $1,800. And I pulled my credit card out, which is a ton of money for me, right? So I go to the back of the room. It's actually this course right here. I got it sitting right there. I get into real estate. I go through his thing. I put ads in the newspapers. And I start getting a whole bunch of leads. Like people want to sell their house. I didn't know what to do with them. Like I failed miserably, right? So I get all these leads. I don't know what to do with them. And then real estate just like goes by the wayside. So I was introduced to it then. But I didn't get back into it until later on in my life, right? So back then I worked some normal jobs and then I got involved with, it was called Odesk at the time. It's now called Upwork, freelancing platform. So I was one of the early people on there and I was always doing SEO. So I started on there just doing SEO for people for like $25 an hour consulting. Then I started getting busy. So I'd raise my rates just for time. And I ended up being like one of the top guys on there. I was billing like $150 an hour. And so I turned like that was my side hustle. So I turned a side hustle into a business while working a full-time job in the insurance industry. Yeah. So it's kind of how I got into that kind of stuff. It's just kind of like fluke. And then I started getting back into real estate. I bought my first property. Remember like what I did, but I actually bought my first property off a wholesaler. So I understood the process, bought the property, saw the wholesale fee. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm really good at marketing. Maybe I should try to see if I can get my own deals. I slapped up a carrot website and we crushed it. And then that's how I started marketing in the real estate space versus like on Upwork, it was all general stuff like e-commerce websites, garages, health insurance, like all kinds of different businesses. And then I niched down into this and that's where we are today. So I like real estate and I like marketing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell us, I mean, going from a freelancer to, $2 million in revenue in that business in 12 months. Tell us how you did that. Obviously, raising your hourly fees $25 to $150 is not going to bring you in $2 million in revenue. How'd you do that so quickly using Upwork, Odesk at that point? I remember using them years back. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what we had. The company was called Think Big Marketing. It was an SEO agency. Did that for like 15 years. And I don't know how many years it was. And then right around when COVID hit, right before COVID, I talked to my buddy Chad. He did digital marketing also on the Facebook side. I'm like, hey, why don't we see if we can get into this real estate space and do something. So we combined our efforts and started running Facebook ads to generate leads from real estate investors and do their marketing. And once I niched down and picked a specific niche, we were able to scale. So before I was never able to get there because it was me doing it, charging an hourly rate. You can only make so much when you're doing it. But if we know how to do marketing for real estate investors, I can take on 500 clients because it's a repeatable thing. So that's how we're able to scale so fast. We're really good at marketing. We know how to spend money and get a return. And we did it really quickly. So that's how we just went like gangbusters.
Yeah. So you're really just taking what was working in one zip code and now you're just multiplying by 500 times. You're just duplicating that process that works like a franchise almost.
Right, exactly. And the thing is with real estate investors, most guys don't know how to market.
Yeah.
No. Like if you're in a health insurance industry or like e-commerce, like those guys understand digital. And why would a real estate investor need to know digital marketing, really? Like you're just buying houses in such a small area. So most guys don't know what SEO is or how to optimize title tags or keyword research or any of that stuff. So the competition was really low also.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So when you focus on like a number of digital marketing strategies, for real estate investors, what have you found, let's say now, is some of the best marketing methods for finding motivated leads, specifically, I guess, in your local area where you're working?
Yeah, so I would say it depends on where you're at in your career. So if you're like early in your career, door knock and stuff, go pay with sweat. You know what I mean? Like get out there and hustle, because you don't want to, like I see a lot of people, they're brand new in business and they try spending money on marketing and they can't sustain it or they don't know how to close a deal. So if you're brand new, go pay with sweat. I think the question you're asking is the guys that are a little bit more seasoned, like where's the best return? In most areas, I would market on Facebook to start because it's a cheaper cost per impression, but you have to be careful. You don't want to just do a Facebook lead form, so it's going to get your real bad leads, like real low quality. You want to like put them through a funnel. Like someone clicks the Facebook ad, goes to a website, the website asks multiple questions, and then it turns into a lead versus just asking like name, phone number, email. But that's probably the cheapest way digitally to start to get fast returns.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a second, because I like that. That's the, you're going for quality over quantity. So you're not calling back a ton of just low quality leads or people that are just telling you to, that was the thing when we do direct mailing, you'd have some people that just call in this is years back when we used to flip houses, and it would be, you do direct mailing out and you get it. The amount of time you spent dealing, we didn't have like a system to go through like this, you know what I mean? But the amount of time you spent just taking people off your list or like calling people, I mean? And then you got someone that's like, oh wow, this person really sells. It's like, it was a low percentage of the people that are actually coming in that are selling, giving you questions, selling questions. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. And that's what I like about digital, because it's inbound marketing first, but the people that are reaching, it depends on your marketing. So if you're going to run your own Facebook ads, you have to be really direct, like put pictures of houses that have like overly dramatic beat up houses, like boards on the houses, things like that, because you want to only target people that might be motivated or have a problem to click your ad. And then on the website, I use a website to disqualify people. So you want to send people to the website, be really direct, like, hey, we're investors, we're not paying top dollar, but we can give you a cash offer, make it convenient. If you're interested, give us your information. And the thing I like about Carrot websites is they have a two-step form. So the first page just asks email, address, and phone number. But then once it clicks to the second page, the second form pre-qualifies a lot of people out. Like a lot of people will fill out the homepage, but not the second, because maybe one of the questions vetted them out. Like, is your house already listed on the MLS? Like, we don't want to talk to somebody that's already listed. So I kind of disqualify people that way, make it a little bit harder for them to get through. So you might only have to talk to 10 people to get a deal versus 100.
Interesting. Yeah. So the door knocking, you would say, for new investors starting out today, what's the next step over door knocking? So once you have some deals, you understand how to close a deal, you understand how to talk to people. Where do you go after that? What would be the next step, you'd say?
So I guess it kind of depends on how you're built. So if you think like an investor, like I'm pretty conservative, but I'm still willing to gamble a little bit. So like after I got first deal, I would take some of the profits and try to reinvest. So basically take the money and try to buy some of your time back. I truly think Facebook is probably one of the cheapest ways, because everything's going to work. Like all marketing channels work. Direct mail, SMS, cold calling. You just have to decide how much time do I want to spend? Because I know a lot of guys have a lot of success with text messaging and cold calling, but you're getting leads for, $10 or something. You have to call a lot more. But then you're also managing an overseas team. Like, are you cut out for them? Do you like doing that? Or is it worth spending a little bit extra money and learning digital a little bit and running ads like that? So it's kind of not a direct answer, but
yeah, no, it makes sense, because you hear a lot of people with the texting, and I sometimes listen to some wholesaler podcasts and stuff like that, and I talk to wholesalers, and some of them invest with us, and it's one of those things. Is the texting is, it's just getting cracked down more and more, and we'll use it. Just the amount of information, we don't even do outbound just with our business, the amount of things we have to sign up for with the FTC and all these things, just like anybody, if you're just responding to inbound texts, not that you're sending them. So it's cracking down a lot. And there's a lot of penalties depending on the state you're in. So it is something you really have to know what you're doing before you get into that.
Very true. And another thing too, which you bring up some good point there. Also, if you want to get into any of these channels, you have to be really careful in this space because there's a lot of people out there giving information with ulterior motives. So you want to do your due diligence. If somebody's telling you Facebook's good or direct mail's good or whatever it is, are they truly saying that that's a good channel based on data, or is it because they sell mail or they sell Facebook or whatever it is? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's perfect. So I want to circle back to really your real estate portfolio because you were able to build this up to $5 million. Can you tell us a little bit about your about really the type of properties that you guys are focusing on when you're sending out your marketing? And I imagine you're using the majority of it's coming from Facebook ads and SEO.
Yeah, so it comes from, so I'll even take a step back. What we do, I do Facebook, SEO, Google Pay-Per-Click, TikTok, YouTube. We basically do all channels. The only reason I'm saying Facebook is Facebook's the easiest entry point. If someone wants, it's like lower risk. Properties I'm looking for, I buy in my zip code. So it's like 2 or 3 mile square radius. I'm ideally looking for 3 and 4 bedroom single family homes. Duplexes would be awesome, but there's only like 10 where I live. So it's really hard to get them. But I like the single families. There's not as much cash flow because I'm in Pittsburgh. So the property value, the rents don't follow the property values. So you might have a $200,000 house that only rents for $1,500 a month, you know, but if you ever need to sell it, they appreciate really well. And anyone wants to buy that house, a family versus in a multi-unit, you're dealing with an investor.
Yeah. There's a lot more liquidity when you're getting into those houses that are going to an end buyer. And usually like when we flipped it, it was always like FHA, you know what I mean? So, and that's FHA all day long.
Right. And I like taking crappy houses and fixing them. It's like you buy a junker. It's in my neighborhood, so it's nice. And we're taking a junky house and making it nice again.
Yeah. So let's talk about like what your team is on the ground for property management. And it's how do you have this structured? I imagine you have a team of contractors. It doesn't sound like you handle any of the day-to-day property management. So tell us how you're kind of like all set up with that.
Sure. So originally when I set up, I had to do everything. Like I bought a house and I just like figured it out. It's like, oh crap, like all the plumbing's bad. Let me call a plumber. And then I was paying retail rates. And eventually I kept calling these guys. People kept screwing me, like not showing up, charging too much money, all that kind of stuff. And I found one guy, his name's Nick. And he started doing work for me. And his work was really good. I didn't have to babysit him, things like that. And he grew, I kept giving him business and he grew and he can basically project manage now. So it's really nice. Once I found him, it's like, I can go look at a property now, walk it with him if we want. We get a ballpark number, what we're looking at. And then I close and I don't think about it again. He goes in there for 30, 45 days, fixes it. I'll keep an eye on it, but it's pretty good at process now. And then whenever we are done, I pass it to the property management company. They rent it out and that's it. I just get a check. So it's kind of passive based on how I built it. But it's also my side hustle.
Yeah. No, that is a... That's a great way of doing it. When we flipped houses, we had one main contractor that would walk with us once we got going, and he would walk with us, and that was the best part of it because you walk the property once, and no matter how you're getting in there, if you're talking to the seller directly or this is something that came like an REO from a bank, you don't have to bother anybody multiple times. You walk it, you understand the numbers, you can put an offer in right there or later that day, whatever it is, and then you're in or you're out. You know what I mean? You're not like, and that makes it a much more professional and succinct system going through. When people are going there, like, oh, I got to go back again and get this and bring it. You're just not going to get it. Another investor is going to come and take that property from you that knows exactly what the rehab's going to cost. And they're going to be more confident in their offer when they bring it to the seller.
Right. And you know what too? Like your numbers are right. You got your contractor walking with you. You're pretty accurate versus like my first house, dude. I got it for so cheap. Luckily, my numbers were so screwed up. I should have lost my shirt there.
Yeah. I have a similar story for my first major renovation on this property. And it was like, I was off and then it worked because it was like terrible market. But the thing that was a terrible part in the market, but it was like, yeah, exactly. If you just, stuff is a lot more expensive than you think and you really have to add on to it. And I don't know. That's why I tell people for new investors, I'm like, you know, even if you have to pay the contractor, because new contractors are going to be a little hesitant going out to someone. If you're like, oh, it's a first time investor, stuff like that. I'm like, offer just to pay them. You know what I mean?
Right.
Pay them for an hour of their time to actually write up a quote that they think they'll never hear from you again. You know what I mean? And it's like, you'll at least you look at it and you understand what stuff costs and you look through it. So next time you walk, you're like, oh, this is what a hot water heater costs. And this is what this costs. And, you know, you kind of have an idea of what really stuff really costs, because sometimes you, if you haven't been to Home Depot for years and you go back in, you're like, oh, my God, what happened here with materials?
And you know what? I do it a little overkill, too. I do a property inspection. Like, I don't put a property under contract for contingencies or anything, but I have a true property inspector come in and like run like 4 hours through the house, even before I do anything, because it's like, I want to see all this stuff.
Yeah. No, that's a great way of making sure that your numbers are going to be on when you're putting offers in. Because the thing with like the wholesaling is, if you don't know the wholesaler or they don't have any experience, you're getting these numbers and these numbers could be way off. You know what I mean? That's the problem that you have with when you're going third party. They're just trying to get an assignment fee. They don't really care what really happens to you on the back end. You know what I mean? Good ones do, because they want you to come back on their buyers list. Do you have money sitting in the stock market and you're worried about it? Or worse, you have money sitting at the bank, not keeping up with inflation? My name is Charles Carrillo, founder and managing partner of Harborside Partners. And since 2006, I've been investing my money and my family's money into income producing properties. These are real assets, real properties with real addresses that produce real cash flow. At Harborside Partners, we provide passive investors who love real estate with a turnkey investing solution. If you want to put your money to work in real estate but can't find deals, don't have the time to get funding, and the last thing that productive people want to do is manage real estate. We find the deals, we fund the deals, and we manage the tenants, the termites, and the properties. Partner with us at investwithharborside.com. That's investwithharborside.com. Go to investwithharborside.com. If you love real estate, you like the idea of passive income, and believe that income-producing properties will appreciate over time, go to investwithharborside.com. That's investwithharborside.com. But with going forward there, you mentioned one thing about buying in one zip code. And this is something I did before, and I bought all my properties, small properties, within like a mile of each other. And it made when I self-manage much easier, and also much easier to find a property manager to take those off my hands when we started growing. But tell me about why just one zip code that you said was only 2 or 3 miles. Obviously, it makes your property management easier, and you know the market inside and out. But are there any other benefits that you've found for doing that?
Yeah, the main reason I do it, number one, I understand the market, like you said. Like, I can walk in, I don't have to do many comps. But the main reason is I'm really, really busy. So going to look at a property, like looking at the property just to see it is a pain in the butt. But I bought one property that was like 4.5, 5 miles out. I had to keep going. And this is when I was meeting the contractor still. I'm going out there like 4 times. I'm driving 20, 30 minutes each way and then talking with them. It was just a huge time suck because I'm driving, talking with them, driving back, 2 hours gone. So it's like, so I decided I'm not doing it anymore because my schedule is so jammed. Anyways, it's like, if it's not within a 5-minute drive of my house, I'm going to pass it on to someone else.
Yeah, well, that's a great way of doing it. And the other thing too, is like when you see the property come up, you would know exactly, you know, hey, a block away or 2 blocks away, we're getting this for rent. This will never work out what this person's asking. You know what I mean? Or
right.
this is red meat for us for moving forward. One other part about your real estate investing, I guess, business, your side hustle, that is pretty interesting, that is not unison within the real estate community, is your low loan to value and keeping your properties with a lower leverage. And tell us about that. I mean, why you've done that and what the reasoning is behind that.
Yeah, sure. And I've thought a lot about this because it's directly opposite of what everybody says to do in a real estate space. It's like leverage money, grow, leverage money, grow, leverage money, grow, right? So initially why I did it is I lived through 2008 and I saw everybody that was over leveraged lose their shirts like hardcore. And my dad's in the finance business. So I always learned don't over leverage stuff. And basically he taught me when I was younger, he's like, you only want to ever owe whatever you can fire sale a property for. Like if something bad happens in your life, you never want to owe more than you can get rid of it quickly. So that's initially why I started doing it. But then even over the last year, I just started thinking more along a Dave Ramsey line, which I know everyone in real estate hates him also, but I'm like, you know what? I can have 20 properties or however many properties paid off free and clear pulling in 20 G's a month, or I can have 100 properties that have a whole bunch of leverage pulling that in. And when I'm 65, be pulling in maybe 50 or whatever it is. And I'm going more for the conservative. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to pay everything off, have cash flow coming in, and then buy stuff with cash, which will be the slower route, but it's a safe route. So I'm like conservative. I don't really want 50 million in loans on 200 million in properties or whatever it is. You know, it's like, more peace of mind on my side. But I know it's like totally against everyone's ideas.
I had a mentor years back, and he would say that, you know, it's all right to over leverage a little bit when you're getting started, but you got to really taper that off. And if you've seen successful, I've purchased properties from successful real estate investors, and they'll have no debt on it after like 10 or 15 years, you know what I mean? Or they have like, it's like a few percent, you know what I mean? It's just like this little out that they can just like write a check for. And it's really true. I mean, the other thing too, is that when you're working through getting rid of properties, like what I've found is somebody was telling me like, oh, I'm going to sell off like all my small properties. I'm like, well, maybe not sell them off. You know, you have some that are problem ones. Why don't you get rid of those? And then you can pay down your debt on your good ones. And I mean, now you have, like you said, 20 paid for properties that actually like run, you know what I mean? And it's just crazy how properties run. Some, I imagine you have this in your portfolio, some that run like clockwork. And then you have some that obviously are really close because of where your portfolio is that are like, I don't know what happens. Why can't get good tenants there or what the issue is all time there.
Yeah. And you know what? That's another thing on my property management. I'm extremely strict. So I'm strict across the board because I'm in a nice neighborhood though. I usually get families. Like I have very little turnover. I probably only turned over 6 properties in my life. And I think I under rent too a little teeny bit that keeps the people there. Like I don't raise rents. But yeah, I have like very little turnover, which is a peace of mind thing also.
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about multifamily here on this podcast, and I got started with small multifamilies, but it was something that with the benefits when you're in single family, it's like you said, you're gonna have high liquidity, especially if you're in that range where people can get the FHA. And then also what you're gonna have is you're gonna have less turnover. I mean, literally, I had a 3 family with people in it before then, but it was a larger, every unit was larger, like 3 bedrooms plus. And you'd have people in there from 3. I had some that over 10 years in the property. You know, literally the majority of the time I own the property, there are people living in there, the same people living in there. And it's just, once you get people in there, they're in a school system, they have the family. I mean, you know what I mean? And if you're not jacking the rents or anything like that, they're going to stay. I mean, now you have a great tenant and a great asset that's covering expenses and making some cash for you.
Yeah. I found allowing people with dogs in helps keep them in there also.
Okay.
Not cats, just dogs.
Dogs. Okay. So what are some common mistakes you see real estate investors make, Ryan, after you're working with them all the time? You're one for many years.
The first one, I see the new guys making mistakes, just getting caught up in the books, like not actually going out. Like that's a huge mistake. It's like, go jump out of the airplane, figure out how to build the parachute on the way down, but like take action when you're starting. And the thing I see with the more seasoned guys is focusing on the wrong things. Like with marketing, everyone's looking at cost per lead. I recommend break your KPIs down, look at cost per appointment, but the only thing that matters really is cost per deal. So like really dive into your KPIs, because if you're doing 10 different channels, 3 of those might be your winners and 7 of them are waste. If you can diagnose that and push all your money to what's working, if you can get clarity on it, that's really good. Really good thing to do.
That's one little side question there is that when you're working with these successful real estate investors that have a team, they have multiple digital marketing channels that they're working on, when they're training their acquisitions people and their dispositions people, if they're wholesalers or maybe they're property managers, have they done all those roles themselves and they train them one off, or are they taking people that were successful at other businesses? How have you seen that done?
I see it done mostly that they're jack of all, like, in the same way I roll, doing each role and then filling it. More in the startup world, I see other companies like in the startup pulling people in that have the experience to pulling people smarter than you in, which is smart.
Right.
But most investors, at least in the single family space, started as a one person operation, then grew, then hired an acquisitions guy, but they've done the job first because they started it. Like everyone starts, most of the guys start wholesaling.
Yeah. And I would also think too, if you're trying to bring in talent, I think if someone leaves a successful acquisition wholesaling company, they're probably going to go start their own. You know what I mean? Whereas like you said, with the startup world, they're probably going to somewhere else where they're going to get more equity, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And do your values align? Like you bring someone in, you're judging, you're letting them build your business, and you're like following their lead, and then you don't understand how it works.
Right. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. When you're dealing with those successful groups, where's the owner in that? Is the owner the one still? Because I've heard before, successful ones are sometimes they're taking the calls and they have someone else that's going out. Obviously, whatever your specialty is, but where have you seen it? Are they really in the field more, or are they really getting leads that have come through that second tier, right? The second filter, and dealing with those people?
Yeah, it depends. It depends what you're considering successful, like guys doing 50 deals a year or guys doing like 500 deals a year. So like the 500 deals a year, I see them actually operating at the top like a CEO would. And they have operators in the build a whole structure. They're following like EOS traction or something like that, like a running like a true oiled machine. The other guy's doing like 30 to 50 deals a year. A lot of times they're doing whatever they can't find that somebody else to do. Like whatever they're going to be doing the one job. They're going to try to hire for all the positions. And then the one that's the hardest, they're going to sit in there until they find the right person. So they may be doing running the appointments, or they may be taking calls or whatever it is.
Yeah, it constricts them a little bit. However, it allows them to really focus on, I guess, what they're best until they find a person for that.
Right.
So Brian, you've been very successful as a digital marketer, as a part-time real estate investor. What are some of the main factors contribute to your success over these decades?
My main factors are like I was saying before, like just starting things. So I think one of my success, I read a book called Richest Man in Babylon. Did you ever hear that one?
Yes. I have it on my shelf. Yeah.
Yeah. So that book right there is like Five Laws of Gold, but basically it's like, don't invest with, tricksters and schemers, save your money, make your money grow, stuff like that. So, and I've always been a go-getter. So I think one of the things I do is if I want to do something, I jump in the pool and figure it out. But I also check box those five things also to make sure I'm not falling shiny object syndrome or getting ripped off. Cause it's really easy to jump in and maybe partner up with somebody. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's go do real estate. But neither of us had done it before. Like that's what I did back in 98. I partnered up with my buddy and we didn't do it before. You're never going to succeed. So it's like jump in the pool and swim, but do it strategically. But I do it really fast. So it's like, okay, if I have an idea, I'm going to do it. I'm going to implement it, but I'm also persistent and I'm not going to quit. It's like you think it through and then you run and run really fast. So I think that's one of my skill sets there.
Yeah, that's some great information. That's a great book. So we'll link to that as well. So Brian, thank you so much for coming on today. How can our listeners learn more about you, your business, your marketing agency?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can just go to motivatedleads.com. It's motivatedleads.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Brian. Looking forward to connecting with you here in the near future, and have a great rest of your week.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, guys. It's Charles from the Global Investors Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're interested in getting involved with real estate, but you don't know where to begin, set up a free 30-minute strategy call with me at ScheduledCharles.com. That's ScheduledCharles.com. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Global Investor Podcast. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Google Play to get new weekly episodes. For more resources and to receive our newsletter, please visit globalinvestorpodcast.com. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode.
Nothing in this episode should be considered specific, personal, or professional advice. Any investment opportunities mentioned on this podcast are limited to accredited investors. Any investments will only be made with proper disclosure, subscription documentation, and are subject to all applicable laws. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, financial, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own. Information is not guaranteed. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The host is operating on behalf of Syndication Superstars, LLC, exclusively.